Good afternoon, everybody. I'm about as nervous as anybody can be. Okay, this talk will be held in my best imitation of English. I hope it turns out to be understandable. BSD, well, that's abstract at the wall. In recent years, Linux has become very popular. It has grown a real movement, has enjoyed enormous public success, and this success of Linux has really overshadowed the availability of other equally or maybe even more powerful and equally freely available Unix operating systems. And with this talk, I would like to introduce BSD as an alternative, in the true sense of the word, to Linux, provide some basic information what BSD is all about, and also to clear away some commonly encountered misconceptions. The name BSD stands for Berkeley Software Distribution. BSD was originally written at the Computer Systems Research Group at the University of California at Berkeley. That's where the name comes from. And it started out as add-on software and a patch kit to, back then, AT&T Unix version 7, 32V. And over time, it evolved into a standalone operating system and eventually was freed of all legacy AT&T code and thus became freely available. Over the course of the years, BSD has been extremely influential on Unix at large. Many things we take granted on the modern Unix system actually derive from BSD. Were invented at Berkeley, first integrated in the BSD, and spread from there. This includes things like the famous or infamous VI editor, the termcap, terminal description database, the C shell, job control, long file names, symbolic links, the whole TCP/IP networking stack with its socket interface, a variety of R tools, R login, R shell, R copy, and so on. I cannot provide a detailed history of BSD in all its flavors and variations over the last 25 years or so. It would take a whole afternoon. You can read an excellent write-up of that history in Kirk McCusick's paper, 20 Years of Berkeley Unix, which has been published in the O'Reilly Open Sources book. And that book is also available online, so you can read it in your web browser. I guess Lehmann's also sold the book here at their booth. BSD development started out around 1977. Was very influential during the 80s, and in the early 1990s, the Computer Systems Research Group at Berkeley was shut down, funding ran out, the project had been, kind of finished, so the developers needed to figure out a way to continue. Some of the former CSRG people went commercial. They founded their own company, BSDI, and continued to develop BSD as BSDOS. There's a variety of BSD systems available today. All of them derive from the final 4.4 BSD release that was published by the CSRG. BSDOS is commercial. I'm not sure whether you can still buy the source code. I know it was available some years ago. Not sure about the current state. BSDOS runs on Intel platform, on Spark, and if you're a big enough customer, also on some other platforms. The main thrust of the company has been embedded internet applications. For example, I'm told that most of your unit internally runs on Spark workstations running BSD OS. To everybody's surprise, some months ago, Apple announced their new Darwin operating system, or the Darwin core component of the new macOS 10 operating system. Darwin is the open source core of this operating system. It's a Mach kernel with a 4.4 BSD personality layer around it. Apple, of course, offers Darwin and macOS 10 mostly for their own PowerPC systems, but a port to the Intel platform is in progress. And of course, most interesting is that you can get part of this, part of the macOS 10 operating system as open source. Well, those are two commercial variants of BSD. The rest of this talk will deal with the freely available ones, entirely freely available ones, which are FreeBSD, NetBSD, and OpenBSD. Of course, the first question everybody asks is, what are the differences between those three flavors of BSD? In general terms, you can compare them to different Linux distributions. That comparison is not quite accurate, but it gives you the main idea of what's going on there. FreeBSD and NetBSD developed pretty much in parallel. They evolved from different patch kits to an early BSD on the Intel platform, which was called 386 BSD. And somehow those patch kits crystallized into two different projects. OpenBSD later split off from NetBSD due to, let's say, some personality conflicts involving the OpenBSD chief developer, Theo de Raad, who is a very competent person and very difficult to deal with. Basically, the main reason for the existence of those three projects is that some people can deal very well with other people and not so well with certain people. So, well, officially, of course, there are technical differences and ideological differences, and, well, each project has an official focus. FreeBSD's focus is optimization for the PC platform. They wanted the fastest, hottest, sexiest Unix on the PC, and so it is today available still only on Intel PCs and the Alpha platform. That one got added, well, not that recently, but most people still don't know. I should point out that the Alpha port of FreeBSD is not experimental anymore. It really is fully functional, and in fact, at the BSD booth down in Hall 6.1, we have an Alpha running FreeBSD, among a zillion other machines. NetBSD's official focus is a clean design and portability. And in fact, NetBSD is the most portable operating system around. And people keep telling me here that Linux is so wonderfully portable and we've just added another platform. And well, Unix has always been portable, or at least since, well, about 1980 or so. And the most portable flavor around is NetBSD. At my last count this afternoon, it supported about 30 different hardware platforms. The latest addition to that was SGI MIPS machines, which was added as an experimental port yesterday. Those roughly 30 platforms comprise 10 different CPU families. NetBSD runs on pretty much everything. Maybe not on your washing machine, although I'm sure that will come eventually, but on everything from small handhelds MIPS-based handhelds, which were designed to run something called Windows CE, whatever that is, to large alpha machines. I mean, really large machines. Something you will not have at home, probably. Yeah?
Well, I suppose it must be at least 32 bits, isn't it, so?
NetBSD? The question was whether NetBSD requires at least a 32-bit CPU. And yes, of course, that is true. You need a 32-bit CPU and a memory management unit. There is a port of NetBSD to the ARM26 platform, which is not quite 32 bits in the code space. I don't really know the details. But basically, you need a 32-bit CPU. But that's not really a major obstacle today. I mean, every microwave oven controller now is probably fast enough. Well, and then there's OpenBSD, which split off from NetBSD around 1995. The main focus of OpenBSD is security and the addition of cryptography in the base system. That's particularly easy for OpenBSD because they are based in Canada, and so they don't have to deal with strange US export regulations, laws, whatever. OpenBSD is also quite multi-platform. It supports something like about 9 platforms. You will have to take account at the website on some 6 CPU families. Those port counts keep changing. Recently, somebody revived the Sun 3 port for OpenBSD. I'm not sure why anybody would still like to run anything on the Sun 3 today, but that's people. So, let's continue to talk about the free distributions. FreeBSD, NetBSD, OpenBSD. The degree of mutual differences among those distributions is, as I mentioned before, roughly comparable to that between Linux distributions. I think if you compare, for example, FreeBSD to OpenBSD, and on the other hand, Red Hat Linux to Debian Linux, you'll find that the userland differences between the BSD flavors are smaller and the kernel differences are larger. From a system administrator's point of view, all BSDs, and of course from a user's point of view, all BSDs, all modern BSDs are very, very similar, more similar than Linux distributions. The three projects are officially quite separate, but there is a lot of code sharing behind the scenes. Linux advocates like to point to BSD fragmentation, but in fact the BSD scene is not that much fragmented and probably less fragmented than the Linux scene. How many Linux distributions are there? Nobody even knows. Well, for BSD you have 3 that are well known, and they exchange a lot of code. They don't always write that on their web page, but there's a lot of code sharing going on, which keeps the differences small. Yes, mentioning web pages. Each project has their own web pages at www.project.org, which means netbsd.org, freebsd.org, openbsd.org, and there you can find lots of documentation. Facts, mailing list archives. Each project has a whole lot of quite active mailing lists. General descriptions of the supported hardware, supported platforms. And there are even hypertext interfaces to the CVS trees. So you can browse the source code online, including the whole history of the source code back to 4.4 BSD. Most BSD distributions are free software, really free software. which does not mean free in the KNU sense, but free in the literal sense of the word. I do not want to get into any discussions about the BSD license versus the KNU license, but I should point out that from a BSD point of view, the GPL is not really a free license. Of course, the BSD projects still use some KNU software, in particular the toolchain, which means compiler, assembler, linker, and some additional utilities. But in particular for embedded applications, you can set up a limited BSD system which is entirely free of GPL software, which can be very important if you want to base a commercial product on this system. Well, the BSD license is quite simple. Originally, it was a four-clause license, and it has a little bit evolved over time. Still in common use today is a two-clause license, BSD license, which has, well, those first two clauses. First, if you make a source distribution of the software, please retain the copyright notice. Second, if you do a binary distribution, please reproduce the copyright notice somewhere in the documentation. This can be summed up as, please give proper credit. And that's about it for most newly written BSD software. There was a third clause in the original license, which said that advertising materials must display an acknowledgement of University of California at Berkeley. That has been officially struck. UCP said, no, we do not want this clause anymore. It's invalid. And as a fourth clause, which is still in force on some parts, that's the name of the University of California or any of the contributors may not be used for promotion without explicit permission. The development model. How is BSD developed? And how does this development compare to the Linux one? First, I need to point out and really to stress that BSD is not developed as a cathedral. I don't know why Eric Raymond wrote that in his famous paper that BSD is an example of cathedral development. It's not. Definitely not. The whole idea is totally absurd. BSD development is not closed in any sense. Everybody can contribute. There is a certain hierarchy and a certain structure, but that does not imply that the development is closed. There are three tiers. First, there are contributors. That is basically everybody. Everybody can submit a change. Maybe you found a spelling bug in a man page, or maybe you rewrote the virtual memory management overnight, or whatever. So you can send in a patch and it will be evaluated, and if it's good, it will just be committed. And of course your name will be added somewhere to a huge list of contributors. The second level are committers. Those are the people who have the actual write access to the source tree at the respective project. Well, that is the main difference from contributors. They can commit their changes themselves, or they will need to commit changes contributed by other people. Committers can have a varying range of responsibility. Most committers only handle a certain specific part of the system, something they know very well, something they're an expert at. And then at the top of the food chain, there's the core team. Those are the bosses. The core team, which speaks with one voice, although it consists of several people, the core team oversees development and it makes the final decisions. say two committers cannot agree on whether a change is good or bad or should be done in that way or another way, then eventually, if they cannot resolve this conflict on their own, the core team will have to make a decision. Both FreeBSD and NetBSD have a core team, which consists of half a dozen people, maybe more. I'd have to check. It's not really important who is part of the core team. OpenBSD does not have a core team, but, well, in practice, not all committers are created equal, and their Theo de Raad always has the last say. Well, how do you become a contributor? I already mentioned, just send in a change. How can you become a committer? Well, just contribute. Eventually, if you contribute enough, or your contributions are of a certain unexpected quality, or whatever, or maybe you are the only person with access to some strange hardware and you will develop for that hardware, then you will be asked whether you want to become a committer, and, well, suddenly you are. Can happen to everybody. Can happen quite unexpected. It happened unexpectedly to me. The core team, well, you do not really want to be part of the core team. These people have no lives. I cannot imagine them having any lives. They are totally dedicated to BSD, and they are probably programming 25 hours a day. Or, I don't know. Just like the Linux kernel, BSD development usually has two branches. One experimental branch for ongoing kernel development and a stable branch. FreeBSD, for example, calls those branches stable and current, and from time to time does an official release, which is just a snapshot, usually from stable at some point in time. The system is built, the CDs are cut, and you can buy them or even download images from FTP server. NetBSD has a similar system. They have a development branch and a stable branch. Naming is somewhat different, but it's the same idea. OpenBSD used to have only a single branch, but they changed that with 2.7 just a few weeks ago. OpenBSD does two releases each year. And after that release, a patch branch is maintained, which integrates important bug fixes compared to the original release. And then there's the current branch, which has ongoing active development and which, of course, can break from time to time, maybe not even be compilable for developers. Now let's talk about what, in my opinion, is the main difference between BSD and Linux. I think this can be summed up in the term integration. It really is the key difference. Integration both as a process and as the result of this process. That's just a mindset thing. Each BSD is a single project. Compare this with Linux. Linux has a kernel project led by Linus Torvalds and Alan Cox, those people. They develop a kernel. That's the thing they do. There are different people who develop a C library. There are other people who take care of the tool chain. There are people who take care of file utils, GNU file utils, and so on, and so on. Many of those projects are even not particular to Linux. They are just generic GNU or Unix projects. Then, a Linux distribution is combined from those many separate projects. And the people doing the combining, the integrators, are not are generally not the people who develop that software. And occasionally, it is quite obvious that they don't even know the software they are putting together. With BSD, this is different. BSD is a single, or each BSD is a single project. If you do a change to, say, LS, then you also take care that this doesn't break any scripts or that anything else that depends on this behavior is updated throughout the system. The people who develop are also the people who integrate all those things with the rest of the system. There are not many different projects that are somehow glued together. As a result, the system integration on BSD is tighter. For example, main patches are more complete, or they exist. Programs interoperate better. There's a more consistent look and feel. This is very hard to quantify or measure in any objective way, but, well, it feels just more well-rounded and more tightly integrated. And even if they didn't know it before, if you talk to some BSD people and tell them about this idea that system integration is better, they will always agree. There are some other differences. Often these are mentioned as main differences between BSD and Linux, but I think they are just consequences of this single project mindset. A BSD system is a single CVS tree. CVS is the most popular version management system around. You have all the basic system in one CVS repository. You can check out the complete source code at one go. You can compile that source code in one go. Try that with any Linux distribution. That's a famous make world command. Usually you will do something like make build world and make install world, but for demonstration purposes, you can recompile and rebuild the complete system with one command. And of course, this leads to a very clear separation between what is the base system and what are add-ons. The base system is all that is in the CVS repository. Add-ons are handled differently. Now, if you look at popular Linux distributions, say SUSE, well, which comes on, I think, 6 CDs now. Now, try to figure out which packages are basic components of a Unix system, which are add-ons, which are well-tested, which are just put on the CD to fill up the remaining space. I do not want to put down Linux in any way, but these are real problems. Okay, so we have a well-defined base system. Now, what are we going to do if we want to install additional third-party software? Things like Emacs or Tech or Netscape or, well, things you will typically not have in the base system. BSD or different BSD projects have a very well developed system to deal with this. Well, first I should mention that, of course, BSD is a Unix system and a POSIX-conformed Unix system, so most free Unix software that is floating around on the net can be compiled with little effort, rather little porting effort, on a BSD system. But it can be done even easier. First, there are packages. NetBSD has some slightly different terminology. They call them precompiled packages because, well, just accept it. Precompiled packages are precompiled software that is ready to run, just like Linux package, RPM package, or Deb package on Debian. You can install it and it will, well, it's ready to run. Very little effort to install. The file format used for those packages is a tar, a compressed tar file, which contains some additional meta information and some files to start with a name starting with a plus sign. Packages are installed into user local or NetBSD under the user package hierarchy, so they are very well separated from the base system, and they are registered in the VARDB package name database. Package installation, removal, viewing, etc. is handled with a variety of package tools. They all start, names always starts with package something, package add, package remove, package delete. Basically, it's not very different from RPM. I mean, all the details are different, the command names are different, the flags are different, but the functionality is just the same. And where RPM does all in one program, there are a variety of different programs on a BSD platform. It's all quite transparent. Then there are ports. Actually, ports come before packages because you use a port to create a package. NetBSD calls ports packages because for them a port is, well, a port of the whole system to a different platform. And since they have so many platforms, they need to talk about this kind of port quite often. So they chose to rename the thing, but a port is a framework where packages are created from. Usually on the installed system, you can find the ports on the user ports category port name. And functionally, a port is the equivalent of an RPM spec file. I don't know how many of you have already built RPMs yourself. Well, I have done some. And again, the details are very different, but the idea is very much the same. BSD did not introduce a whole new tool like the RPM command. Rather, we decided to use the existing infrastructure. And this is very much centered on the make command. BSD's make is very powerful. It has quite a few extensions over plain old version 7 make. Unfortunately, those extensions are different from the one GNU make uses. Oh well. The main part of a port is one central makefile. That makefile contains a few variable assignments. Nothing very impressive. And at the end, there's a .include BSD port makefile, which is one huge makefile, some 2,000 to 3,000 lines, which does all the real work. There's a lot of magic in there. Well, how you work with a port? Well, you can cd to the directory where the port is located and type make install. Then the ports framework will take care of fetching the original source tarball from the internet, assuming you are connected. Checking the checksum. We do want to know whether we got the correct tarball or whether somebody has tampered with it. Unpack the sources, apply some patches that may be necessary to adapt that particular piece of software to BSD or to the ports framework. Configure the software, compile it, and install it. One command, make install. All the rest will be done automatically. You can also rather trivially build a package from this port or by just typing make package. Creating a port is not really difficult. It depends, of course, on the software you want to create this port for. Again, it is very much like creating an RPM spec file or generally an RPM on Linux or of course also a Debian package, but I've never done that. A whole lot of software is already available as a port or a package. FreeBSD, as the largest of the BSD projects, is leading here. At my last count, FreeBSD had some 3,400 ports. That's a whole lot of software. So if you're looking for something, check the ports collection. It probably is already there. NetBSD has some 1,600 ports. OpenBSD, some, well, 800, I think. System administration. Now we have installed our BSD system. How do we take care of it? How is system administration handled on BSD, and how is this different from Linux? Well, first, there are no Qt admin tools. There's no LinuxConf or Yast or anything like that. Configuration is done by manually editing a few selected text files. I mean, that is the way experienced sysadmins do it anyway. Framstack agrees. A lot of startup configuration is centralized in one central, etc., rcconf file. There you can set up the network, what interfaces you have, what their IP numbers are, network masks, things like that. You can even configure some firewall rules, network address translation rules. Then you can set up the console, what font, what key map. Maybe you want some Russian key map or some Ukrainian font or whatever. You can customize your screensaver, things like that. And you can also in that very same file decide which daemons to run for most daemons that are in the base system. Things like sendmail or the printer daemon, network time protocol daemon. Just say variable, yes, no. There's a default file available which has very sensible defaults, and you can easily customize this. Some other things, of course, have to be configured separately. There's a separate configuration file for the resolver library to get name service. That's pretty much the same like you're used to it on Linux. Building a kernel. Linux people love to rebuild their kernels. I don't know why. Rebuilding your kernel on BSD is pretty much the same as it is on Linux. It's just completely different. But again, the ideas are the same. The kernel configuration is stored in one text file. That is usually located under sysarch, depending on which BSD we are talking about, the actual architecture, conf, and the name of the kernel config file. You can just edit that file with a plain text editor, whatever you prefer, Emacs, VI, add. There's a generic file provided, which is the generic kernel used on the installation media. And FreeBSD also has a lint kernel configuration file which lists all the available kernel configuration options. So you can use these as templates to come up with your own customized configuration for your machine. You can also, for documentation on the available devices, check the man pages. There are quite a few Section 9 man pages which detail what drivers there are available and what options those kernel drivers offer. Oh, and after that, you run a config command and a make command, and you have a new kernel. Reboot, and there you are. BSD also supports kernel modules. Currently, modularization is not as extensive as it is on Linux, but we are getting there. Many things are available as modules, particularly on FreeBSD. For example, on FreeBSD, most foreign file systems are available as kernel modules, and they can be loaded transparently by the mount command. So you do not even have to explicitly load, say, an ISO file system module. You can just mount the CD, and if there is no support for the CD-ROM file system in the kernel, the mount command will try to load the kernel module, and if that exists, will succeed. Then, of course, there's the issue of reporting bugs. We all like to believe that our software doesn't have any bugs, but real life is always a little bit different. And, of course, sometimes users would like to submit some suggestions. So, BSD comes with a sendpr command. We call that up, sendpr. It offers a simple mask, which is quite commented. It tells you what you need to enter, and then you can enter a description of the item or your suggestion or the details of the configuration. You can, if you have met a problem and already found a fix, you can add a patch and just then send that off, and it will be submitted to the central NETS database of the project. Another topic that often comes up is the question of the file system. BSD uses by default as the native hard disk file system, well, the Berkeley Fast File System, FFS. File systems are supported up to the size of, I think, 16 terabytes. It kind of depends on some options you choose, such as the block size. And, which is an interesting difference compared to Linux or previous versions of Linux, you can of course have 64-bit files on 2-bit architectures, which means files larger than 2 gigabytes. And this was available already in 4.4 BSD in 1993, so it's not really new for us. Generally, the BSD fast file system and Linux extended file system corrupted.